Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Guaranty Trust Holding Company's Half Year 2025 Investor Analyst Conference Call. All attendees will be in listen-only mode. There will be an opportunity to ask questions when prompted. If you should need assistance during the call, please signal an operator by keying in star and then zero. Please note that this event is being recorded. I will now hand you over to Segun Agbaje. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, everybody. Thank you for coming onto the call. The investor presentation was put out on Thursday, so we'll just go straight to Q&A. So I'm ready for the first question. Thank you very much for joining.
Thank you, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to ask a question, please key in star and then one on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate that your line is in the question queue. You may key in star and then two to leave the question queue. Just a reminder, please ensure that you limit your questions to two per analyst. We further request that you ensure that your line is unmuted and your background noise is limited when asking your question. Our first question comes from Timothy Wambu of Absa. Please go ahead.
Thank you, and good afternoon. Hi, Segun.
Good afternoon.
Thank you. Just a couple of questions from my end. I'll try to keep them to the prescribed number. The first question is on, given the capital raising that you have embarked on, give us a sense of whether your FX equity position changes from what was previously there after the London listing. My second question is a bit more clarity on the financial assets recoveries that you made that appear in your OpEx line. So there's a reversal from impairments to recoveries of about 38 billion. Just some more color on that. And then let me just sneak in one more on your dividend policy with regards to what you should expect for the current financial year. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. I will, as usual, I try to elaborate a little bit just in case there's a question that's related. The first thing is the capital raise didn't change the long position because it was converted into Naira since we had to invest in the bank. So the long position remains the same. Capital raise that was done from the U.K. is now in Naira in the bank, and so the bank has met its 500 billion. In terms of recovery, that recovery was basically out of Ghana. So they had made a provision on, I forget the name. So it's actual recovery that was made in Ghana, I believe. In terms of dividends, let me spend just a little bit of time because I'm sure that a lot of people might have a question on dividends. The first thing I always say about an interim dividend, and hopefully I'll clear it, is that you don't blow a full-time whistle at halftime. And basically, an interim dividend is just basically symbolic. And so we've chosen to pay 1 naira, which means that we can use the rest of the year to work with the income we have. If you take the quality of the results, you would see for great analysts like yourself that if you take the PAT and you back out 15% statutory reserves and 5%, that tells you how much we could have paid a dividend. That's how strong the quality of earnings are. We will retain our 60% dividend policy, so very easily you can work backwards into what we could have paid. Hopefully, if we're on track till the end of the year, again, it will tell you what we can pay because these results had really no revaluation of derivatives. So dividend policy stays the same, and I've just tried to give a bit of a rationale as to why we only paid 1 naira out of what we could have paid a half year. I don't know if that answers your questions.
Yes, it does. Maybe just a quick rejoinder on that. If you could just confirm that 60% payout policy is 60% excluding the FX revaluations. If you don't mind, maybe just repeat the exact.
Well, as you can see, Well, in this case, we only had 6.5 billion derivatives. So these earnings this year are very different from last year. So yes, excluding FX revaluation, but FX revaluation is immaterial in the results you see at half year 2025.
Right. And maybe just a quick one on the FX equity position. So that doesn't change. If you don't mind, just if you could remind us what value you attach to that.
$820 million. Yeah.
All right. Thanks.
Thank you.
The next question comes from Rona Gardia of Donbras. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, Segun, and congratulations for the results, and thanks for taking the time to take my questions today. Perhaps if you don't mind, my first question is just really a continuation of Tim's question on dividends. Like you mentioned, it's the policy is 60%, I believe, of core earnings. So maybe could you just clarify if, you know, the first half results, was it just 100% core earnings, because like you mentioned, the FX revaluation gain was pretty low, or was there not some non-core element to it that we should be adjusting? And also, on this dividend policy, so if I look at your numbers now, around 65% of your profits is from Nigeria. I'm guessing you're not upstreaming profits from the other subsidiaries. So I was wondering if, you know, can you sustain a policy payout of 50 to 60%, given that the contribution of Nigeria has decreased and presumably should continue decreasing because you should see stronger growth outside? Or should we estimate, you know, the dividend policy should be 60% of Nigeria's profits? If you could just clarify that. So that was just the dividend question. The second question is on maybe your asset allocation. We saw the central bank reduce the CRR by 5 percentage points last week. Just what's the implication for that? How much liquidity does that release into your balance sheet? And just maybe related to that, when we look at your balance sheet, apart from the CRR, there was a huge amount of cash holdings in USD. Maybe could you just help us understand, you know, why you're holding such a significant liquidity position? And now with, you know, the macro environment improving, if we could see some of that liquidity being deployed into you know, private sector loans. Thank you.
Okay. Sorry, I've just kind of taken the last one. And as I always say, if I don't answer everything, please come back so I can give you clarification. In terms of the dividends, just like I had explained, always look at the dividends. Don't look at the dividends we pay. Just look at an income in Nigeria, because we can always pay dividends out of the subsidiaries. And if you look at that result, we paid 40 billion out of Ghana up into Nigeria, into the bank. So please always look at your potential as 60% of the bank, because we know how we can work it. And you can always pay dividends out of the countries that come up into Nigeria. So I would say always focus on the total bank profit, take the PAT at bank level and take 60% of that. So that's the simple answer to dividends. If you look at, and I will spend a little bit of time on 2025 half year one results. Really, the results at half year 2025 we're pretty pleased with, because it's really basically all core earnings. And it will also start to answer some of your third question. If you look at those results, the loan book is up 20.5%. This really is the first time we've pushed like this in the last 5-6 years. And we've only just started. The fixed income securities went up 17%. So again, we're not pushing fixed income securities. We've pushed the loan book beyond that. We also then have cash and cash equivalents. You say we have a lot of cash. No, we only grew that 2%. So that's our dollar cash position, which we're yet to disperse, because we're not growing the dollar loan book aggressively, because the yields there are lower and we can make more money. And so the split in the loan book today is 52-48. So there's no aggressive dollar growth. And then if you look at deposits, deposits have grown 19%. So this is really core income that you'll see. The revaluation and derivative gains in that profit is only 6.5 billion. So we're very happy with the quality of earnings. It is really cash-based. It is not non-cash, which is why the tax rate this year is 25% against the tax rate of last year, which was 10%, because most of that was non-core. So in terms of asset allocation, you can see what's beginning to happen. CRR, we got a CRR release of 230 billion, which means we can deploy it into loans, we can deploy it into fixed income. We're not going to do anything crazy. We're going to continue to grow the loan book. As we told people when we were raising capital, we think we can do a 30% loan growth going forward. And you can see we're 20.5. So really, if you look at our asset allocation going forward, you start to see a bit more aggression with the loan book, quality, low risk. You will see us still play the fixed income book because it's still profitable, but we might not grow it as fast. And you'll see cash and cash equivalents coming down. And basically, that's what you should expect in terms of asset allocation going forward. And you should expect that there'll be more of the loan book in local currency versus foreign currency. I don't know if that answered your three questions.
No, it does. I will get back in the queue for some follow-ups, but thanks for
okay. That. All right. Thank you.
The next question comes from Gloria Fadipe of CSL Stockbrokers. Please go ahead. Gloria, your line is open. You can ask your question.
Yeah, good afternoon. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can now.
Okay, so I just wanted to figure out the loan growth you're talking about, what sectors are they typically from?
Well, if you look at it, I would say it's basically three main sectors: manufacturing, a little bit of oil and gas, and retail. Those are basically the sectors we're growing.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, just a reminder, if you'd like to ask a question, you're welcome to key in star and then one. As a reminder, please ensure that you limit yourselves to two questions per analyst. We further request that you ensure that your line is unmuted and your background noise is limited when asking your question. Going on to the next question, which comes from Will Kay from Frontiera Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for the call. I'm wondering if you could provide some color on the sharp increase in deposit costs that we've seen this quarter. Thanks.
Okay, couple of things. Well, I wouldn't say it's that sharp. We're 2.2, which is still pretty good. But part of what you're seeing on a group basis is that you're now, most of all, some of it is from the bank. There's obviously a bit of pressure for pricing on deposits as you started to see basically a widespread on fixed income. But some of it is also the asset management company's cost. They now have about 675 billion in AUM, which has an interest cost. We also have some areas outside of Nigeria, especially East Africa, where a lot of it is wholesale. But truly, I still think, or we believe, that the cost is under control at 2.2. Even with a cost of 2.2, we're still back in news of about 12.4. So we pay the 2, we look at a yield of 14.6, we look at a cost of 2.2, we have a NIM of 12.4. We still think it's under control. So it has gone up, but I wouldn't say it's out of control by any means. I don't know if that's answered the question.
Yeah, that's very helpful. If I could ask one more, sure. Just looking at the balance sheet, it looks that there was, you know, quite a large write-off in Q2. Could you give any color on that?
Yes. We have completely de-risked this balance sheet. We had an oil and gas name that was left, that most people might take the position that it's still performing, but we've taken the position that we don't like the performance. And so we've basically written that off, and we will recover our money. I'm choosing at this point not to mention the name because I think for a lot of people they still see it performing on their books. So yes, we did take one write-off. And then what that has done as far as we're concerned to the risk on our loan book is that you will see that in stage two, we have 1.8. In stage one, we have 94%. So we're less than 3% in stage three. So we did think we should do that. We think it's a prudent thing to do. If the second half of the year, it happens to be different and the rest of the market is correct or we're wrong, then we'll write it back.
Understood. That's all for me. Thank you.
Thank you.
The next question comes from Olumide Sole of Renaissance Capital Africa. Please go ahead.
Hello, good afternoon. So straight to my question, I just wanted to ask regarding the loan book growth, which you highlighted earlier, that we're expecting about 30% loan book growth year on year, and that's this year, and maybe looking ahead from after this year or other years going ahead. And just looking at also the deposit growth, I saw that deposit growth has not really gone down. It's not that high this year, or I'm not really seeing deposit grow. So if loan book growth is at 30% and deposit that is not really going, that's it kind of implied that we see a high LDR ratio. And I just want to get clarity on that. Is that the new expectation? Because historically LDR has been quite low. So should we start seeing LDR increase significantly for the bank? And not just that, I wanted to also ask regarding for the government securities, they have been for the balance sheet, government securities have taken a very significant portion of that. Should we start to see loan book growth also take more size or take significantly higher than government securities? Okay, that's all from my end.
Okay, sorry, I think I might have answered some of these questions, but I'm going to answer them again. The first thing is, I don't know what you look at, but deposit growth is 19%, which is actually strong, against a loan growth of 20.5. So we're going to grow our deposits in tandem with our loan growth. So as we approach 30% loan growth, we're going to put the deposit growth closer to that. So what you're seeing is we're mirroring as much as possible our deposit growth and our loan growth. We're not just going to grow deposits for the sake of it. We're going to grow it where we can go into earning assets. And then, like I said earlier on, we are going to prioritize loan growth going forward. We will continue to grow fixed income. But as you can see, we've done 17% versus 20%. So, yes, you will see us de-emphasize fixed income growth. We will favor deposit growth. Our prognosis is that you're going to see a decline in interest rate curve. And that as interest rates come down, it's a good time to switch some of your asset allocation from fixed income to loan growth. So you're going to see us start to do a bit of that, yes. Hope that answers your questions.
Yeah, but regarding LDR, that's loan-to-deposit ratio.
Listen, LDR, for me, it's a function of what you're doing with your deposit and your loan growth. If you're at LDR of 28%, we're not even in a realm of where we're worried about LDR now. When you start to approach 70% loan-to-deposit ratios, you start to get worried. At 28%, what you focus on is growing your loan book, growing your customer deposits so you can fund it. When you get to 70% LDR, you start to ask a few questions. We're still too far from that at 28% LDR. Okay?
Okay, yep.
Thank you.
The next question comes from Precious Jugere of Cardinal Stone Securities. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon.
Yeah.
Yeah, so to answer the question, I would like to get a sense of how the bank is assessing the new non-TSA CRR of 75%, you know, any implications on the bank. Secondly, could you please speak to the reduction in deposits from banks, you know, about 36% decline there year to date. which of course emanated from an almost absolute withdrawal of money market deposits. And I don't know if someone has asked this question already, but for income tax expense, we noticed a 50% jump year on year. Please could you provide some insight around that as well? Thank you.
Okay, first of all, I have answered some of this, but I'll answer them again. CRR, there's only 5%, as you can imagine. If you look at what is 3-4, government's like 3-4% of our deposit base, so the 75% didn't do much to us. But we've got a net credit of 230 billion, so that tells you where we were in terms of the 75%. So we're actually great benefactors. 45%. In terms of tax, yes, we went up from 10% to 25%, and that tells you about the quality of earnings. You do not, when you see a low tax rate, it means that the profit you're looking at is non-cash. Last year, of the 1 trillion PBT, 623 billion of it was non-cash based, so we didn't pay tax on it. This year, the 600 billion you see is all cash outside of 6.5, which is why we have paid 25% tax. And that is the reason for the increase in the tax, because the quality of earnings this year is cash based. So that's the simple explanation there. I don't know what money market, we are not really a money market placer. And what you look at when you analyze us as a bank is basically customer deposits, and our customer deposits are up 19%. I hope that answers your questions.
Yes, thank you.
The next question comes from Larry Baluru, who's an investor. Please go ahead.
Hi, Sheikh. Sorry, it's Larry from Chapel Hill.
Yeah, hi. How are you? They said you're an investor. But, you know, I hope you are anyway. But, yeah.
Well, yes, Chapel Hill is. Thanks. Curious on, over the weekend and last week, a barrage of guidelines and new regulation from the pension regulator, and of importance or of, I guess, critical note is the new capital requirements. And how are you seeing it, and how is that impacting strategy in that business vertical for you?
Okay, thank you very much. First of all, I've been educated that yet again it's paid up. I hope it will be shareholders' funds, but the truth is, for us, it's not a big deal. We're at about 10.5 billion of paid up in our PFA. It means that we need to raise another 9.5. Quite frankly, all we have to do is retain maybe about 20 cobalt dividends at the point where we need to do it in the holding company, and we can capitalize it. So, from our perspective, we think we'll get to 20 billion very easily. What do I think it'll do to the industry? I'm not sure it will change the competitive positioning significantly. I think the big players will get to the figures very easily, and that the people who will be affected are the small players. But where we stand, I think we can see our way through to the 20 billion quite easily. For us, it's about 9.5.
So I mean, there's a leg to that, right? So it's that 20 plus a percent of AUMs. I mean, given where you are, maybe not material.
Exactly. Good thing is we don't have that problem yet. We're at about 130 something. So, but I think the way you will deal with the 500 billion as you approach it, at least if you're us, is that you will just start leaving more money in the business. I really am not sure yet, because it's not my own problem, whether they think it's going to be paid up or at that point it's going to be shareholders' funds. But for now, we've dimensioned our own problem where we don't have the over 500 problem. So for now, our only problem is the 20 billion.
Clear. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
The next question comes from Gabriel Desmond of WSTC Financial Services. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon. Can you hear me now?
Yes, good afternoon.
Okay, so I was logged out. My question is, with declining yields and rate cuts, which will actually see more cuts happening maybe in November, I would like to see a decline in your cost of fund and also your borrowing rates.
Well, declining yields, yeah, we will always move with the market. I wish sometimes if you could answer these questions with 100% certainty, you would be in orbit. I think even as yields decline, you won't be as drastic as you make out, and that things will be more gradual. And that at all times, what we will try to do is protect our NIM. And we like our NIM in where it is about 12.4. So we will continue to play to preserve that NIM, and we will respond to what the market is. But where I sit today, I do not see a dramatic shift in yields so far since the MPC. So we'll wait and see. We'll respond. Cost of funds might come down, but for us, cost of funds is 2.2. So the upside for a reduction in cost of funds is not that great. So what we'll have to do is manage more the yield on the asset side. But we'll wait and see. I mean, we're not going to die a thousand deaths, and we really don't believe that there's going to be any dramatic shift in yields between now and year end. It's the position we're taking.
All right. So what are your dividend payout ratio expectation for the year end?
I think I already said that. Dividend payout ratio has not changed. It's 60%. We like the quality of earnings that we see at this rate. We feel reasonably confident that we'll definitely pay a higher dividend than 2024.
All right. Thank you very much.
Ladies and gentlemen, just a reminder, if you'd like to ask a question, you're welcome to key in star and then 1 on your telephone keypad. Once again, please ensure that your line is unmuted and your background noise is limited when asking a question. Our next question comes from Tajuddin Ibrahim of Chapel Hill Denham. Please go ahead.
Thank you so much, and congratulations on your numbers. The first question I would like you to give further color on actually is what your broad expectations are when we talk about interest rates, considering that we have entered a dovish monetary cycle. So it would be useful if you can guide us into what you would expect into 2026. And I think the second thing is, I did not really get what your dividend payout ratio, target is. Did you say 60% or something lower? If you can clarify that, I will appreciate it. Thanks.
Okay, first of all, it was 60 dividend payout ratio. In terms of dividend expectation, well, you saw there was a 50 basis cut. Inflation is down at about 20% levels. So my expectation is that interest rates in 2026 are, the trend is downwards, and that the businesses and the portfolios will adjust accordingly. If you ask me what my expectations are, when a drop in interest rate environment going forward.
So just to add, one bit, the capital that you raised, recently, would you say that it has, fully been deployed, or do you want to just, speak to it, just so that we have a good sense around the deployment of that capital? Thanks.
First of all, it's been fully deployed, but as you can imagine, you wouldn't see it. The good thing is Chapel Hill Denham worked on this transaction, so you won't see it in half-year results because that capital came in July. But it has been fully deployed, and what you will see as we go forward, as I've said, is we will probably change the asset allocation as we go forward. Maybe more of it is in fixed income. Going forward, more of it might go into loans. Still shuffle it, but as of today, fully deployed in earning assets. So yes, capital started to work.
Okay.
Yes,
it does. I just do not know if you will be willing to speak to what your biggest sector would be in terms of lending, from the current, period into 2026. What would be your biggest lending sector? Thanks.
I think it'll be manufacturing. I think it'll be manufacturing, basically. We're pretty happy with where our oil and gas book is, so you won't see any major shifts. You might see pay downs, and we might see it. We also hope to increase our, you wanted biggest, so the biggest will be manufacturing. But the other sectors where we would like to give some strength to would also be retail and SME. Oil and gas would be a maintain.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Okay, I think we're done with that question.
Apologies. The next question comes from Seki Matukwa of Ashmore Group. Please go ahead.
Hi, Segun. Hope you can hear me. Thanks for the
call. Yes, I can.
Okay, perfect. So slightly random question, but in terms of your sort of understanding of the process of the London line where capital was raised and then the DRs, previous DRs being converted into this so that there are more shares available, i.e. more liquidity on the London line, I'm struggling to get much of sort of a definitive timeline from my custodian. Just curious as to what you're being told about the process, how far we are from the likes of Chapel Hill or others you're sort of in contact with, please.
Oh, I think everybody's done, and that all that is left is the issuance of the master CCI, which is an ECCI. So we will get that. There are no other things. In fact, the person who probably has greatest sight at this point is Citibank custodian. I'm sure, like I said, all things for fungibility are in place, and I'm sure you know the rules as well around fungibility, which is your capital importation has to have been in Guarantee Trust Bank shares, and you can go in and out. So we're just waiting for issuance of master CCIs.
Okay, perfect. I'll chase up on that. And then the second and final one from me was, obviously you've talked about the risk-weighted asset growth. I'm curious when you look at the sort of pipeline, let's say at the end of June versus the pipeline end of June 2024, are we talking sort of multiples in terms of what corporates are signing to? It may or may not be drawn down, but obviously purely in terms of that origination side of things, how exciting is that prospect compared to where we were a year ago?
Oh, God, I think Nigeria from where we were a year or two ago is like night and day. I think the reforms have settled well into the system. You have dollar liquidity. You have interest rates that make sense. So a year or two ago, our loan growth was probably under 5%. Now our loan growth is 20%, which means we are comfortable. The corporates, I also believe, are doing more regular business. Nobody's front-loading. So a lot of the activity you see today tells you about what's going on in the economy. And that is the only reason why I would be able to say to you, we are optimistic enough to go for a 30% loan growth going forward for a group that we wouldn't even talk to you about loan growth before. So I think there is optimism, there is liquidity, interest rates are right, demand is growing. So I would think that most corporates, at least the corporates we have on our books, are open for business and are looking to do business.
Thank you.
The next question comes from Timothy Wambu of APSA. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Just a couple of follow-up questions. The first one is, so arguably we could say that forbearance really, it really helped manage NPL formation you know, from early 2020 to date. Now, you plan to grow your risk assets. It sounds quite aggressively. You know, if you look at the prime lending rate, it's north of 15%. Would you be worried about NPL formation? And I look at this with the lens of East Africa, where lofty interest rates, you know, have seen, for instance, industry NPL ratio in the mid-teens. I'm just wondering now, without that forbearance, which was a proper, we'll say, you know, guard against NPL formation, do you think that's an area of concern? My second question is that you do not provide any guidance in your presentation. I'm just curious why. And I think this might help to answer the question on the expectation of the dividend. I think most of us are looking at 60% of your core profits, and it looks like a significant figure. And I think it would have helped if we had your projection for full year. So I think we are sort of salivating at how significant it will be. So because if I look at your revaluation gains, they were not that significant. 19 billion unrealized FX gain together with unrealized gains on four transactions, about 30 billion. So maybe I think that's what you are trying to get at when you keep on asking about the dividend. Thank you.
Okay, you're an extremely great analyst, so I'm going to leave you to work to the number, but I'm going to try to help a little bit. First, let me apologize. The reason we didn't give a guidance this year was that we had to do the transaction, and we were told not to try to lead the market with any guidance. Obviously, by half year, we really didn't think it was worth doing a six-month guidance, so I apologize, but that's why we didn't do a guidance for this year. As you have rightly said, if you look at the earnings at half year, there's little or no derivative gain there, unlike last year, which was 623 billion. The central bank then says remove 15% for statutory reserves, remove 5% for SME. That's a 20%. The rest of it, honestly, after tax, is available. You will then determine what percentage of that you want to pay out. We never really guide too much about dividends, but I think I've given enough of a direction as to how you can come into the dividend. Also, for you to understand that we are very happy with the quality of earnings, you would see that the tax rate is 25%, higher than the tax paid on 1 trillion because this is all cash based. And the central bank allows you to pay dividends on cash based profit after statutory deductions. So that's how we're going to arrive at the dividend. You can work all those numbers and you would see, like I had said, the only thing I'm willing to kind of comment on is that I do believe it will be better than last year from where I sit today. Forbearance, we didn't have that many forbearances. We're going to be very careful, and it depends on what your credit risk appetite is. We're not just going to grow the loan book stupidly because we've said 30%. If we don't find quality loans, we won't grow. We're going to try to diversify. So we're going to try not to pick up NPLs as we grow the loan book, but please trust us, we're not throwing caution to the winds. We'll be very careful, and we don't intend to go and grow a loan book at the expense of an NPL. I would also hope that there will never be forbearances again. I'm not sure that's necessarily a good practice, and that people should make sure that they do their risk assessments properly, and if loans go bad, you should provide for them. And if they're performing, you don't provide for them. I think that will keep everybody... I think it will keep us all the way bankers should be, which is to assess credit properly. So I'm not hoping, or I do not believe you'll see a spike in our NPLs as we grow the loan.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
The next question comes from Olamide Sole of Renaissance Capital Africa. Please go ahead.
Yeah, okay. A couple of questions, a couple of follow-up questions. I saw that for Treasury shares, it's more than doubled from December 2024 to compared to half year 2025. However, I was just a bit curious. Is it anyway related to the LSE offering? Also, I wanted to ask regarding the capital adequacy ratio. I can see that the LSE offering, the amount raised there, wasn't included in the computation. So, if we include it, what will it be? What will it be at? And also, looking at the level of the capital adequacy ratio, can it be considered too high? So that's just my question. That's my question.
Okay, thank you. Obviously, it's not there. Like I said, the capital didn't come until July, so it's not in half-year results. It's 36% at half-year. Unfortunately, I don't have the figure for you post-half-year, but I can get Banji to send it to you. So I think we have more than enough capital. Is it too high? It's high, but we'll work it down slowly. The worst thing you want to do when you have this kind of capital adequacy ratios go on a loan spree, all that will happen is that you pick up NPLs. So we'll deploy this capital very sensibly and bring down the capital adequacy ratio over time. It's not something we tend to do overnight. The fixed income growth had nothing to do with obviously the London listing. London listing didn't happen until July. So the fixed income growth has to do with a couple of things. Deposit growth and then partly the capital we raised in August, which came in January. So more the last capital raise, less the London one.
Okay, so look, I meant the treasury shares, not the fixed income, treasury shares.
Sorry, what do you mean treasury shares? In Nigeria, you're not allowed treasuries. You don't do treasury. I'm a little confused.
Okay, the treasury shares under the capital adequacy computation.
Yeah, that will be part of your fixed income book, no?
Okay. I get that. Okay, yeah. And one more question.
Treasury stock, no.
Okay. I get that now. And one more question. I'm going to ask regarding the business expansion regarding PSEs and asset management. Where's the group currently at in pursuing the strategy or the goals?
Oh, God, we're very happy, by the way, with these businesses. If you look at group contribution, East Africa today is 1.5% of group. And we've been at it for 10 years, and we've been sweating it. We bought these businesses 3 years ago. They were nothing. They were in 1.4% of group. Half year profit is around 9 billion from these three small businesses. So I think we're on track. We're at different phases of happiness. I think with Habari Pay and the asset management business, we're more happy. With pension, we're less happy. But, you know, you've got to balance everything. So if I take the three new businesses, I would say we're fairly satisfied with where we are. We paid 11 billion for these businesses. We're going to make it about 20 billion a year for 3 years. I would say it was a decent investment.
Okay. Yep, that answers my question.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, just a further reminder, if you'd like to ask a question, please key in star and then 1 on your telephone keypad. Our next question comes from Paul Kelly of Ventura Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi. Could you comment on the magnitude of NPL formation in just in Q2, not in the first half? Could you talk about what sectors you saw that NPL formation in, and then also just generally, do you view this as a kind of normal amount of formation or extraordinary? Thanks.
Okay, from our perspective, I would call this extraordinary. I think we just, like I said earlier on, we had one loan in the oil and gas sector, which, by the way, the reason I'm being very careful about not throwing the name out there is I think every other bank has decided this loan is performing. We've chosen it's not. We've taken the provision. So I'd say it's extraordinary. In the general course of events, at least from our loan book, we're not seeing anything out of whack. We do think NPLs are under control. Quality of loans seem to be okay, which is why if you look at the composition of our staging of our loans, we're 94% stage 1, 1.8% stage 2, and about 4% stage 3. So from that perspective, it tells you what we think is happening on our balance in terms of NPLs. But we chose to do something quarter 2 and take that one provision, which was around $50 million. So I would call it an extraordinary provision we took in quarter 2.
Okay, understood.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, with that, we have no further questions in the question queue.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you for everybody who came on. Look forward to talking to you about end of year results. Thank you. God bless. Have a good day. Bye-bye.
Thank you, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes today's event. Thank you for joining us. Anyone, I'll disconnect your lines.